There is a race on today, and you are in it. And the only question is whether or not you're going to win or lose. And this is up to you. The advantage you have is that the great majority of other people don't realize that they're in a race to the finish, and they either don't know how to compete, or they're not aware of how important it is to win. It took 6,000 years of recorded history for man to move from the agricultural age into the industrial age, which officially got going in about 1815. By 1950, the majority of employees in the advanced countries were industrial workers from one end of the world to the other. But by 1960, the industrial age was over, and we had entered into the service age. There were more people delivering services than there were in manufacturing. By the late 70s, we had entered into the information age, and as we go into the 21st century, we are already in the communications age. There are more people employed now in some form of communication of information, ideas, entertainment, news, or education than there are employed in any other single industry. We've gone from muscle power to mind power, from brute power to brain power. For the rest of your life, the knowledge content of everything you do is going to determine the quality and quantity of value that you contribute to your work and to your life. According to Moore's Law, information processing capacity doubles every 18 months and drops in half in cost at the same time. What this means is really quite incredible. If the cost of a new Lexus automobile had kept pace with the cost of computing capacity, a new Lexus today would cost $2, get 700 miles from a gallon of gas, and travel at 500 miles per hour. In fact, a new Lexus today has more computer systems in it than the Apollo 13, which was the most advanced moon rocket of its time. In a new automobile today, more money is spent on electronics than on steel. We've moved into the information age with knowledge as the primary source of value, so fast that most of the major institutions of society have not yet caught up or caught on. Financial institutions today, banks especially, are completely baffled at the fact that a $100 million factory can be rendered obsolete with a change in technology in as little as 18 months. But brain power can be used in an infinite number of ways and in an infinite number of directions to create wealth with virtually no investment at all in fixed assets. When a financial institution today asks for collateral, they have no way of measuring the fact that the most valuable assets of the company are between the ears of the people who work there. The entire organization could burn to the ground tomorrow, and the brain power could walk across the street and start over again in a matter of a few hours. In the old days, just a few decades ago, if a factory burned down, it was out of business, and sometimes an entire community would collapse. Today, that's no longer possible. You've heard of the winning edge concept. This concept, one of the most important ideas of the 20th century, says that small differences in knowledge and ability can lead to enormous differences in results. One small piece of information that you have that your competitors lack can be all that it takes for you to gain the winning edge in any transaction. For example, if a horse runs in a horse race and comes in first by a nose, it wins 10 times as much as the horse that comes in second by a nose. Does this mean that the horse that wins is 10 times faster? Twice as fast? 10% faster? No. The horse that wins is only a nose faster, but a nose translates into 10 times the prize money. When a salesperson or a company gets the sale or transaction in a competitive market, it is often only a tiny bit better than the company that loses it. But the company that wins the transaction gets 100% of the sale, 100% of the profit, and the salesperson gets 100% of the commission. Is the company or salesperson 100% better than the company or salesperson who loses the deal? No. The company or salesperson has merely developed the winning edge, and that makes all the difference. There's a lot of talk today about insecurity in the labor force. People are being laid off by the tens of thousands, and this trend will continue with massive layoffs every year for as long as you're in the workforce. The reason is that knowledge is doubling every 2 to 3 years. You could take all the knowledge accumulated in human history from every country and in every form and put it into a huge pile. And 3 years from now, at most, there would be another pile of new knowledge equal to or greater than the first pile. And knowledge multiplies times itself. Every new piece of knowledge can be combined and recombined with other pieces of knowledge to create more knowledge. So instead of knowledge increasing at a mathematical rate in a steady progression, it is increasing at an exponential rate, faster and faster. By early in the 21st century, knowledge will be doubling every year. This means that today your knowledge must double every 2 to 3 years just for you to stay even at your current income in your current field of work. If your knowledge is not increasing at the same speed that general knowledge is increasing in your field, you will be in great danger of becoming obsolete. The reason people are laid off is that companies need new forms of knowledge, and they need more knowledgeable people in newer, more specialized areas. Just as AT&T is announcing the layoffs of tens of thousands of people, it is announcing the hiring of tens of thousands of people in different positions with different knowledge, performing different tasks. A key luck factor is the law of integrative complexity. This law says that in every group of individuals, the individual who can integrate the greatest number of pieces of information will rise and eventually dominate all the other individuals within that group. To put it another way, the law of integrative complexity says that the more knowledge and experience a person has, the more patterns he or she can recognize and take action upon in any given set of circumstances. The person with the greatest pattern recognition ability will always rise to the top of any organization of value because his or her judgment and contribution will be of greater value and have greater impact on other people and on the organization than anyone else. In its simplest terms, the top salespeople tend to remain the top salespeople. Why? Because they've worked many weeks, many months, and years to become more and more knowledgeable and skilled at selling ever more competitive products to ever more sophisticated and demanding customers. As a result, like runners gaining an edge and increasing it as the race goes on, the top salespeople pull ahead and often way ahead of their competitors by being exposed to more and more patterns in more and more complex and varied sales. This enables them to sell more and more. You've heard it said that nothing succeeds like success. Well, this is what happens in virtually every competitive field. With the rapid expansion of knowledge in your field and your world, your existing store of knowledge is becoming obsolete at a more rapid rate than ever before. If you were to take a trip around the world in a catamaran and be gone for a year or two, when you got back, you would find that 30%, 40%, or even 50% of all the knowledge that you had accumulated that justified your salary and position in your business before you left was no longer valid or of any use anymore. Some fields have rates of knowledge obsolescence that are far faster and greater than others. For example, on the slow side, the knowledge of a historian or librarian, slow-changing fields, may take 10 or 20 years or even longer to become obsolete. However, the knowledge of a stockbroker of prices, market positions, interest rates, economic dynamics, and so on may become completely obsolete in a few weeks or even a few days. One significant political event can so affect opinion polls as to make all of the accumulated knowledge of how an election is going to turn out obsolete overnight and create a whole new ballgame. An important luck factor is the rule that the future belongs to the competent. The future does not belong to the well-meaning, the sincere, or the merely ambitious. It belongs to those who are very, very good at what they do. There's an old saying that the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Today, however, it is not a contest between those who have more and those who have less. It is a competition between those who know more and those who know less. The most significant differences in income in America are between those who have continually increased their levels of knowledge and skill and those who have not. Another key luck factor is to earn more, you must learn more. You are maxed out today at your current level of knowledge and skill. If you want to increase your income and your earning ability, you have to learn more new valuable information and ideas that you can apply in the marketplace to create value for someone. It's often been said that knowledge is power. The fact is that only applied knowledge is power. Only knowledge that can be utilized to bring about a benefit that someone will pay for is power in today's marketplace. And how do you evaluate a piece of knowledge? Simple. Valuable knowledge increases your ability to get results for other people. There are enormous quantities of knowledge taught in universities that are absolutely true, but totally useless in the real world. One of the problems with college graduates is that they are always shocked to find out that they have spent 3 or 4 years learning about subjects that absolutely no one but themselves really cares about. No employer anywhere is willing to pay them anything for having a degree in archaeology or anthropology. This is why fully 80% of college graduates find themselves working outside their fields of study within 2 years of leaving school. As I mentioned earlier, I started off with very few advantages in life, but I had one thing. I liked to read. Over time, I got hooked on reading and learning. Over the years, I found that virtually every successful person in America who has started with nothing and worked his way up has done it through a commitment to personal development and personal growth. The law of self-development says that you can learn anything you need to learn to achieve any goal you set for yourself. This is one of the great laws of success. It means that there are really no limitations on what you can accomplish. It says that if you can be clear about your goal, you can identify the knowledge that you must have to achieve it. And by identifying it and then acquiring that knowledge, the achievement of your goal becomes inevitable. Just imagine, you can start off with nothing but an intense desire to be successful, and then by the process of self-study and self-development, you can learn anything you need to learn to achieve any goal you can set for yourself. 90% of all fortunes today are still made in regular businesses selling established products and services in established markets to established customers. All you really need is an idea that is 10% new to start a fortune. All you need is a new piece of knowledge, a new idea, a new insight, and the willingness and ability to apply it in the marketplace, and you can become a big success in our economic system. Abraham Lincoln once wrote, "I will study and prepare myself, and someday my chance will come." One of the great luck factors is that luck is when preparation meets opportunity. It's amazing how many people are sitting around waiting and hoping for a lucky break. But people do not just have lucky breaks. They make their lucky breaks. They create their lucky breaks by preparing so thoroughly for their opportunity that when it does come along, they're ready to grasp it and run with it like a fumble in a football game toward the goal lines. Earl Nightingale once said that if your opportunity comes and you are not prepared for it, you will only look foolish. By the law of attraction, when you do put in the preparation, you will attract into your life an opportunity to use your knowledge and skills at the level you're ready for. The law of talents is another key luck factor. It says, to quote Jim Rohn, that if you develop your talents, they will make way for you. You will never develop a useful talent or ability without having sooner or later an opportunity to apply that talent or ability to some good purpose. It's absolutely amazing, but you will draw into your life the people, circumstances, opportunities, and resources necessary for you to apply that talent that you worked so hard to develop. The law of variety, as it applies to ideas, says that your success will be determined by the quality and quantity of ideas that you can generate to improve your current circumstances. Ideas are the keys to the future. Ideas are the primary source of value. Ideas are the cream of knowledge rising to the top. But remember, ideas in and of themselves have no value. It's only your ability to take an idea and to execute it in such a way that you can bring about valuable improvement that adds worth to the idea. I'm always amazed when people write to me or phone and try to sell me their new idea. I ask them what it is. They tell me that they can't tell me the idea until I've paid them money for it. I try to explain to them that their ideas are of no value by themselves, and they're always amazed. You see, 99 out of 100 ideas don't work. And the one idea that does work only has value when it is combined and recombined with a variety of other ideas and resources to achieve some worthy end. With regard to knowledge, you have a distinct advantage. The great majority of people are drifting along, hopelessly unaware that their knowledge is limited and it's becoming obsolete more and more every day. They spend most of their time socializing at work and at home, watching television, and generally living as easy a life as possible. However, the small, intelligent minority like yourself who realize that we're in a race for useful knowledge have the winning edge. You are already ahead of the pack because you realize what you need to do to move to the top of your field. If you want to know how high they're going to build an office building, you can tell by looking at how deep they dig the foundation. The depth of the foundation determines how high the structure can be erected. But once a building is complete, the owners cannot go back and add on another 20 or 30 floors by digging the foundation deeper. It's too late for that. With regard to yourself, the same principle holds true. You can tell how high you will rise in life by how deeply you dig your intellectual foundation. And the wonderful thing about yourself is that you can continually increase the height of your personal life structure by continually increasing the depth of your knowledge and understanding. And there are virtually no limits. You attract good luck by the quality of your thinking, and the quality of your thinking is determined by your commitment to continuous learning. The more you soak your mind in new knowledge, new insights, new ideas, and new information, the more your mind will be stimulated and magnetized to attract into your life all kinds of opportunities and possibilities to help you achieve your goals and live a great life. The key to expanding your knowledge is reading. Perhaps not all readers are leaders, but all leaders are readers. And how much do you read? Well, look around you. The highest paid Americans read an average of 2 to 3 hours per day. The lowest paid Americans don't read at all. In fact, these statistics are shocking. According to the American Booksellers Association, 80% of American families did not buy or read a single book in the last year. 70% of American adults have not been into a bookstore in the last 5 years. 58% of adults never read another book after they leave high school, including 42% of university graduates. According to USA Today, 43.6% of American adults read below the seventh grade level. To all intents and purposes, this means that they are functionally illiterate. Fully 50% of high school graduates can neither read their graduation diplomas nor fill out an application form for a job at McDonald's. Many large companies that advertise continually looking for qualified people are forced to reject fully 95% of all applicants because of a lack of basic reading skills. Last year in America, $5.4 billion was spent in the movie industry. This was the highest amount ever spent in a single year. If you look around you, you will see movie stars and movie industry news in every newspaper and on half the magazines on every news rack. They are the constant subject of news and entertainment on television and radio. It is as though we are surrounded by and immersed in a movie culture. But what you probably don't know is that last year, Americans spent more than $25 billion on books. They purchased more than 1 billion books from all sources. In fact, this knowledge age has been dubbed the age of the book. If you go into the home of a wealthy person, what's the very first thing you see? And the answer is a library. The wealthier the people and the larger the home, the more likely it is that they will have a large, fully stocked library. If you go into the home of poor people, what's the very first thing you see? That's right, the biggest darn television they can afford. Now here's a question for you. Did the people become wealthy and then buy the books? Or did they buy the books and read them and then become wealthy? I think the answer is clear. The chicken does come before the egg. I had a friend who graduated from high school without learning to read. He was upset to find that the only jobs he could get were minimum wage laboring jobs, digging ditches, planting trees, and sweeping floors. He came from a good home and a good neighborhood, but all he could get was dead-end jobs. And all his friends who got out of high school without learning to read were in the same situation. After a year and a half of this frustrating work, he came to me and asked for my advice. I told him that he needed to increase and upgrade his education. He told me that he didn't really like to read. Reading big paragraphs actually made him tired, he said. I told him that he had better go to a community college and take a course on reading. He was reluctant to do it, but he was even more reluctant to continue working as a laborer. So he went to a community college at night for 2 years. He learned how to read proficiently and well. As a result, he applied to a technical school and took a degree in biomedical electronics. It took him 2 more years to graduate, but he was then immediately hired by a large hospital supply company to sell medical instrumentation to hospitals and clinics. Within 5 years, he was earning more than $50,000 per year. He had a home and a car and a great life. And he told me later that the advice to learn to read and upgrade his education was the turning point in his career. Here are some keys for you for upgrading your knowledge through reading. They've been successful for me and for thousands of other people who are now highly paid leaders in their industries. The very best books to read are those written by men and women who are actively working in their fields. They are books written by experts, by practitioners of their crafts. Stay away from books written by university professors and management consultants. These people usually do not have the in-depth understanding that comes from working all day long, year after year, in a particular field. The wonderful thing is that you can buy a book full of ideas that someone else has taken 20 years to learn and then to write about. For the price of a book, you can get the knowledge that has cost that other individual years of time and thousands of dollars to accumulate. Remember, all you need is one good idea to change the whole course of your life. Here's an important point. Every problem that you could ever have has already been solved by someone somewhere. And the solution that that person has found to your problem is written in a book or magazine and is available to you if you can find it. If there's an idea out there that can help you, that can save you thousands of dollars and months or years of hard work, and you don't have the idea, it's just as if that idea didn't exist at all. This is why successful people are always orienting themselves so that they're continually bombarding their mind with new information and new ideas. Remember, you may be exposed to 100 ideas before you're hit by the one idea that you need at that moment to make a major difference in your life and work. The rule is that it requires a high quantity of ideas to find the one or two quality insights that you require. Build your own library. Buy your own books. Don't check them out and then take them back. When you buy a book, underline the key points with a colored pen or highlighter. Make the books your own property. When I first started buying and marking up my own books, I found that it might take me a few hours to read a book the first time, but then I could read all of the key points through in less than an hour. Now I quickly read a book and then dictate all the most valuable ideas to be typed up and reviewed later. Speed reading is a skill that you can and you should learn with a little practice. There's a complete description of the speed reading process on my audio program, Accelerated Learning Techniques, but let me give you a simple method here that can double and triple the speed at which you read any book. It's based on what is called the OPIR method, or O-P-I-R. These four letters stand for Overview, Preview, In-View, and Review. Here's how you use this simple technique. Before you plunge into a book, always start with an overview. Read the front of the book and the back. Read the biography of the author and make sure that this is a person who really knows what he or she is talking about. Read the table of contents and ask yourself whether or not these ideas are of interest to you. Read the appendix and the index quickly to see what information sources the author used. If you get a good feeling about the book and you think that it has some value for you, you go to the next stage. The second stage of rapid reading is the preview stage. This is where you take the book and you page through it from cover to cover, one page at a time. You read the chapter headings and paragraph headings. You look at the graphs and the charts and diagrams. Read the first lines of as many paragraphs as you can. Read a couple of paragraphs through to get a feeling for the style of the author. Determine whether or not you are comfortable with the book and whether or not you enjoy the way the author expresses himself. The best way to save several hours in reading any book is to throw it away and not read it at all. One of the best of all time savers is to decide in advance that the book is not of sufficient value for you to spend several hours reading it. If after the overview and the preview you want to read the book, you ask yourself why. When you ask yourself this question, it forces you to think about what you can gain from the book and how you can apply it to your life. This is called reading on purpose. The more relevant and applicable new information is, the more likely it is that you will remember it when you're finished. The third stage of reading is the in-view. If you're reading a nonfiction book, start with the chapter that is most interesting to you and then stop if you don't feel like proceeding. Sometimes an excellent book will have only one or two chapters that are relevant to you and your life right now. What you'll find is that if the information is not immediately helpful to you, you'll forget it anyway, so why read it in the first place? As you proceed with the in-view, make as many notations as possible. Underline key sentences and phrases. Use exclamation points, stars, and quotation marks in the margins. Circle key ideas. Make it easy for you to come back and find the facts that you thought most important. The final stage of the OPIR method is to review the book. No matter how smart you are, you have to go over key points three or four times before they stick in your memory. But once you've marked up a book properly, you can flip through it quickly in as little as an hour and get the essence of the entire book. Where do you get the best business books? It's simple. Join the various business book clubs advertised in the business magazines. Get the four free books that they offer at a reduced rate and add to your library by buying one or two of their choices each year. In no time at all, you'll be one of the best informed people in your circle. Another thing you can do is to subscribe to SoundView Book Summaries. This is an organization that summarizes two or more top business books every month. They hire professionals who condense the key points of the book into an easily readable 4 to 8 page format. You can keep abreast of the best that is being written for business people by getting a key synopsis of these books each month. Another thing you can do is subscribe to Fast Track. This organization summarizes two business books on an audio tape every month. You can listen to the summaries with all the key points in your car. I've personally gotten a lot of great ideas from these summaries without ever having to read the entire books. In expanding your current knowledge, it's important that you subscribe to the key magazines and publications in your field. If you're in business at all, you should subscribe to Fortune and Forbes. If you're in sales, you should subscribe to Success, Selling, and Personal Selling magazines. If you're in senior management, you should be taking the Harvard Business Review and perhaps the Sloan Business Review. The best way to find out what to read is to ask the most successful people in your field what they read. What books would they most recommend? What magazines do they enjoy the most and read the most regularly? By the law of cause and effect, if you read what the very best people read, you will soon know what the very best people know. You will develop the winning edges in your field. With magazines, use the rip and read method to save time. Go to the table of contents of the magazine. Circle the articles that you feel would be important to you. Go straight to those articles and tear them out. Throw the rest of the magazine away. Put the torn out articles into a file and put the file in the back of your briefcase. Then, whenever you have a few moments, pull out your rip and read file and go through the articles with a red pen or a highlighter. There are two types of reading, maintenance reading and growth reading. Maintenance reading is the current magazines and publications which keep you up to date with your field. Growth reading, on the other hand, are the books that you read that actually increase your knowledge and understanding in your field. They enable you to grow rather than just to stay even. Listen to audio learning programs in your car and when you're exercising. The average car owner in America drives 12,000 to 25,000 miles each year. This is the equivalent of 500 to 1,000 hours that you spend in your car each year. Use this time well. Turn your car into a learning machine, a university on wheels. Remember, when you're traveling during the daytime, you are not on vacation. You don't have the luxury of driving around listening to the radio or to music. This is working time. You must keep your mind fully engaged by continually bombarding your mind with new ideas and concepts such as these. You can get the equivalent of 3 to 6 months of 40-hour weeks, or 1 to 2 full-time university semesters each year by just listening to audio programs in your car as you drive from place to place. You can become one of the smartest and highest paid people in your field by using audio listening to its fullest advantage. To continually expand your knowledge, take every seminar and course that you can. Remember, the loser always asks, how much does it cost? But the winner always asks, how much is it worth? Go to courses taught by practical authorities, by experts in their fields. Take courses that are taught by people who are actually out there practicing in their fields during the daytime. And be perfectly selfish. Take those courses that are the most relevant and which can be the most helpful to you immediately. The faster that you can apply a piece of new information, the more likely it is that you will learn it and retain it for life. Remember, one good idea is all you need to give yourself an edge in a competitive situation. And the courses and seminars offered today are loaded with good ideas. They are usually taught by highly skilled authorities who jam a lot of value-packed information into a short period of time. Many people I know have doubled and tripled their incomes as a result of attending a single seminar. You simply cannot afford to avoid the process of continuous learning. You must absorb new ideas like a sponge. You should attend trade shows, conventions, and exhibitions, especially those that are specific or relevant to your field. I've spoken at countless annual conventions and association meetings over the years. What I have found is that the very best and highest paid people in their industries are always at the conventions. They are always touring the exhibition floors. They're always in the front rows at the key sessions given at those conferences. And you must do the same thing that the top people do if you want to be one of the top people as well. Every change or improvement in your life comes as the result of your mind colliding with a new idea. Your job is to increase the probabilities that you will be hit with the right idea or insight at the right time for you, and you do this by consciously and deliberately putting yourself into the crossfire of ideas and insights in your work. Finally, one of the most important things you can do to rise to the top of your field in the information age is to ask people for advice and for input. Ask them for recommendations on books, audio programs, and courses. Ask them for answers to questions and for solutions to problems. One good piece of advice from someone who's had a similar experience can save you weeks and months of hard work and enormous amounts of money. Benjamin Franklin once said that there are two ways that we can get our knowledge. We can either buy it or we can borrow it. By buying it, we pay full price in terms of time and treasure. But by borrowing it, we get it from others who have already paid full price to learn it. By continually bombarding your mind with new information and ideas, you activate all the mental laws that we've talked about and trigger all the luck factors that we've discussed so far in this program. Your goal is to become one of the most knowledgeable people in your field. And when you do, you'll become one of the most valuable and highly paid people in your industry. You will rise rapidly and be promoted steadily. You will move into the top 10% of income earners with all the prestige, recognition, and respect that goes with it. You will live in a larger house, drive a newer car, and have a bigger bank account. And when people accuse you of being lucky, you can simply tell them that the more I learn, the luckier I get. You have the ability right now to exceed all your previous levels of achievement. You have within you this very moment the talents you need to be, have, and do far more than you've ever accomplished in your life to date. The fact is that you can learn the skills that you need to learn to do the job you need to do in an excellent fashion to achieve any goal that you can set for yourself. When a musical virtuoso plays a perfect piece of classical music on a violin or a piano, or when the three tenors, Pavarotti, Domingo, and Carrera, sing exquisite opera, no one ascribes their accomplishments to luck. When a craftsman builds a beautiful piece of art or furniture, elegant and refined in every detail, obviously a superb piece of work, no one explains or dismisses his achievement as having been a matter of good luck. In every case, whenever you see someone do something in an excellent fashion, you recognize and appreciate a work of mastery. You know that many weeks, months, and even years of hard work and detailed preparation precede an excellent performance of any kind. My good friend Nito Cobain, one of the finest professional speakers in America, has explained to me that he would often invest 100 hours of planning, preparation, and rehearsal for a one-hour talk that he would only give to a single audience on a single occasion. When a professional salesperson carefully analyzes his market, identifies his ideal prospects, uses the telephone and fax to set up and confirm appointments, establishes a high level of rapport, makes an excellent presentation for his product or service, and walks away with the order, no one can ascribe his accomplishment to luck. In every case, we are talking about mastery. There is tremendous resentment against achievement in the world today. Because in a highly competitive world, it takes many years to become very, very good at what you do and to earn the rewards that go with your performance, the great majority of people who are not willing to put in the same efforts that you are resent the rewards that you earn as a result of your dedication. They then tell you and others that you've just been lucky, while they have, unfortunately, just been unlucky. But you know the truth. We live in a universe governed by law, not chaos. There's a reason for everything. And great success in any field is largely the result of higher standards and higher overall levels of performance in that field. It's been the same throughout human history, and it is even more true today at every level of our economic system. The fact is that the market only pays extraordinary rewards for extraordinary performance. The market pays ordinary rewards for ordinary performance and below-average rewards, unemployment, and insecurity for below-average performance. There are two mental illnesses that are rampant across America and much of the industrialized world today. The first is the something-for-nothing disease, and the second is the quick-fix disease. Either of these can be fatal to your success, but both of them in combination can be disastrous. The something-for-nothing disease is contracted by people who think that they can get more out than they put in. They think that they can put in a dollar and get $2 back. They're constantly looking for opportunities to enrich themselves without paying full price. People with the something-for-nothing disease are trying to violate the basic laws of the universe, the laws of sowing and reaping, action and reaction, cause and effect. And one of the great success principles is to never attempt to violate universal laws and hope to succeed. Violating universal laws is the same as attempting to violate the law of gravity. You've heard the story of the person who jumps off a 30-story building to commit suicide. As he passes the 15th floor, someone leans out of the window and shouts, "How's it going?" The individual hurling toward the earth shouts back, "So far, so good." Well, every single person who is trying to get out more than they put in is in that same situation. They may appear to be doing well in the short term, but they are plummeting rapidly toward a rude awakening in life. Don't let this happen to you. The second mental illness is the quick fix illness. This happens to people who are looking for fast, easy ways to develop key skills that may actually take months and even years of hard work. Or they're looking for a way to solve a problem quickly and easily that may have taken them their whole lives to develop. these people become suckers for the latest get-rich-quick scheme. They buy lottery tickets and sign up for pyramid schemes. They buy penny stocks and invest in things that they don't know anything about, but which promise a quick return. These people often waste many years of hard work and savings searching for the will-o'-the-wisp of quick, easy success. The law of service is an important luck factor. It says that your rewards will always be equal to the value of your service to others. The universe is always in balance. You'll always get out what you put in. If you want to increase the quality and quantity of your rewards, you must focus on increasing the quality and quantity of your service to others. One of the best questions that you can ask yourself every single morning is, how can I increase the value of my service to my customers today? Your customers are the people who depend upon you for the work that you do. Your customers are those people the satisfaction of whom determines your rewards, your success, your recognition, and your progress in your financial life. Who are your customers? For example, your boss is your primary customer. Your most important job is to please your boss by doing what he or she considers to be the most important task for you at any given time. If you're a manager, your staff are also your customers. Your job is to please them in such a way that they do an outstanding job in pleasing the people that they are meant to serve. If you're in sales or entrepreneurship, the people in the marketplace who use your products or services are perhaps your most important customers. All great success, all great fortunes come from serving people with what they want and are willing to pay for better than someone else can serve them. It's a truism in life that you do not get what you want, but rather you get what you deserve. Your primary job in life is for you to do whatever is necessary to assure that you actually deserve the rewards and benefits that you desire. Any attempt to get something that you do not honestly and justly deserve is doomed to failure and frustration. All corrupt or criminal activity is aimed at somehow getting rewards without first deserving them in the first place. The word deserve comes from the two Latin words, the prefix de and the word servus. The two words combined mean from service. Many people have vague, uneasy feelings that they do not deserve to be successful and prosperous. They have what some psychologists call the fear of success. But the fact is that you deserve all the good things that life has to offer as long as you honestly earn them from service to others. Your job is to put in the cause, and the effects will take care of themselves. Your job is to do what you do in an excellent fashion, and your rewards will flow to you as the result of law, not by chance or luck. Peter Drucker once wrote that even if you are starting a new business off your kitchen table, your goal must be leadership in your industry, or you shouldn't even begin at all. If all you want to do is make a quick buck or an independent income, you'll never be particularly successful, and you will probably eventually go broke. But if your goal is to create a business that offers an extraordinary product or service better than anyone else in a competitive marketplace, and you focus on your goal with tremendous intensity of purpose, you will achieve success that is unprecedented in your industry. Like Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak designing the first Apple computer in a garage, you can end up building a world-class organization. But even if you don't build a huge company, your commitment to doing what you do in an outstanding fashion is the greatest single assurance of your success in the long term. As an individual, your goal must be to join the top 10% of people in your field. Any goal less than being one of the best is not worthy of you. You must be willing to overcome any obstacle, solve any problem, and pay any price to rise into the upper echelons of your work. Here's a simple test. You can tell if you're in the right field by your attitude toward excellence in that field, especially your attitude toward the very best people at the top of your field today. All really successful people have a deep down admiration and respect for the highest performers in their industries. And since you always move in the direction of what you most secretly admire, The top people in every field got there by first admiring the others who had become the top people in that field. However, there are many people working today who don't particularly care about being at the top of their field. They're content to be way back in the pack, like average runners in a marathon race. They don't particularly see themselves as capable of winning, and they don't particularly care. They're more concerned with security than with achievement. And the worst thing is when they go one step further and they begin to criticize and denigrate successful people in their industry. They begin to complain about them behind their backs and point out their faults and shortcomings. And alas, this attitude is invariably fatal to success. No one who criticizes the high performers in an industry ever becomes a high performer himself or herself. The law of ability is a key luck factor as well. This law says that if you can set a clear, specific goal that you intensely desire to achieve, it means that you have within you the ability to do whatever is necessary to achieve that goal. The law of practice says that whatever you practice over and over again eventually becomes a new habit or skill. Bear Bryant, the great University of Alabama football coach, once said that success is not a result of the will to win. Everyone has that. Great success comes as a result of the willingness to prepare to win. The only real measure of how high you can fly and how far you can go is contained in the question, how badly do you want it? If you want to achieve a level of skill and ability badly enough, and you're willing to pay the price in terms of effort and sacrifice, you will eventually accomplish it. Every extraordinary achievement is the result of thousands of ordinary achievements that no one ever sees or appreciates. Every great accomplishment is the result of hundreds and perhaps thousands of hours of painstaking effort and preparation and study and practice that very few people are even aware of. But if you put it in, you will eventually get it out. When you completely trust this law, it will work for you. And the longer you have to wait, the greater will be the rewards when they eventually come. Longfellow once wrote, "Those heights by great men won and kept were not achieved by sudden flight, but they, while their companions slept, were toiling upward in the night." Today we would say that successful people are those who were toiling upward in the night while their companions watched television. And how can you tell how much preparation you have put in so far? It's easy to measure. Just look around you. The laws of sowing and reaping, cause and effect, correspondence, and even mental equivalence all say that your outer world will be a reflection of your inner world. Your outer world of accomplishments will exactly reflect your inner world of preparation. If at any time you're not happy with your outer world of results and rewards, you have but to go back to work on yourself and change your inner world so that it is more consistent with what you want to enjoy on the outside. In the earlier session on goal setting, I encourage you to write down 10 goals that you want to accomplish in the next 12 months. I also asked you to select the one goal from those 10 that would have the greatest positive impact on all your other goals if you were to attain it. Now I want you to take this exercise one step further. Once you've decided on your major definite purpose, your number one most important single goal, you must ask yourself, what must I be absolutely excellent at doing in order to achieve this goal? Since you know that you can only achieve a goal when you are thoroughly prepared and capable of achieving it, what skills, abilities, and talents do you need to go to work on developing in order to deserve the most important goal on your list? Just as you need a goal list, you also need a skill list. You need to make a list of all the skills that you have to have to enjoy the kind of life that you most desire. The horse does come before the cart. The skill development does come before the realization of the rewards that you want. There's an important concept developed at Harvard University called critical success factors. These are the skills at which you must absolutely positively be good at if you want to achieve success in your field. Now, there are seldom more than 5 to 7 critical success factors in any field. And in every area of life, these 5 to 7 factors can be identified. If you're in sales, there are 5 to 7 factors. If you're in management, there are 5 to 7 factors. If you want to be a good parent, there are again 5 to 7 factors. If you are running a business, there are seldom more than 5 to 7 factors that determine all your success or all your failure. In some cases, there may be only 1 or 2 factors that absolutely positively determine the success or failure of the enterprise or activity. Your most powerful ability is your ability to think. Thomas Edison once wrote that there is no expedient that the average person will not go to avoid the hard labor of thinking. For you to excel in your work, you must think. You must identify the individual components of skill that you will have to master to move to the top. And here is a great discovery. Your weakest critical success factor determines the height at which you can use all your other skills. Let me give you a simple example. If you are absolutely excellent in every single part of selling except for prospecting, that weakness in prospecting will set the height of your success and the height of your income in sales. If you're absolutely excellent at every critical success factor except for closing the sale, that one weakness will determine your level of sales and how much money you make. If you're a manager and you're absolutely excellent at every part of your job except delegating, you'll never be particularly successful in your field. Or you could be absolutely excellent at every part of your job except selecting key people to work for you, and that one weakness will hold you back and trip you up every step of the way. One of the hardest things for you to do is to openly and honestly admit that you are not particularly good in some area. And the areas in which you are weak are often areas that you don't particularly like. Because you don't like them, like most salespeople dislike prospecting, you avoid those areas as much as possible. As a result, you get weaker and weaker in those areas. Soon, you begin to engage in all kinds of rationalizations and justifications for your poor performance in that area. You blame the marketplace, the products and services, the management, the advertising, and the competition. If you're not careful, you'll end up blaming every other force around you except for yourself and your own low-level ability in that particular skill. What one skill, if you developed it and did it consistently in an excellent fashion, would have the greatest positive impact on your career? You probably know the answer to that question as soon as you hear it. What one skill, if you did it in an excellent fashion, would have the greatest positive impact on your career? What is it for you? If you don't know for sure, go and ask other people around you. Remember, feedback is the breakfast of champions. It's virtually impossible for you to get better without getting honest, candid feedback from others who can view your performance from the outside and tell you what they see. If you're in sales, ask your sales manager if there's any skill area where you're weak. Have your sales manager or someone else come out with you on sales calls and sit there quietly to observe you in action. Remember, we cannot see ourselves anywhere near as clearly as other people can see us. We have to be willing to open ourselves up to constructive criticism if we want to grow. Most of us have blind spots that make us impervious to our own weaknesses. Sometimes someone will point out a weakness that we have and we'll argue angrily with them. We will declare that it's not so. We will insist that we're already good in that area or at least better than someone else. But this is not for you. Your goal is to invite constructive feedback so that you can get better and better and better. Your goal is to be the best, no matter what the price, especially if the price involves your ego or your pride. Don't let vanity or fragile self-esteem stand in the way of your learning what you need to know to move ahead in your life. An extension of critical success factors is what are called key result areas. Your key result areas in any job or position are the specific outcomes or results that you have been hired to achieve in your job. Your performance in your key result areas determines your pay, your promotion, and your prestige in your company. Your ability to clearly identify your key result areas and to organize them by priority is absolutely essential to your achieving mastery in your field. All truly lucky people are very, very good at doing the one or two things that make all the difference in their work. A key result area can be defined as a specific outcome for which you are completely responsible. It is measurable, and it is under your control. If you don't do it, it doesn't get done. A key result area is an output of your job and an input for someone else's job. It's an integral part of the functioning of the organization. For example, if you're in sales, a key result area is closing the sale and getting the check. Once you've done this, the complete order becomes an input for the order department, the accounting department, the manufacturing, distribution, and delivery departments. If you don't do it, it doesn't get done. And if you do it and do it well, it affects and influences the behavior and performance of a whole series of other people. Each key result area has a standard of performance of some kind. It may be vague or it may be clear. Your job is to set standards of excellent performance in each of your key result areas. It's therefore essential that you are perfectly clear about the most important results that you are expected to contribute to your organization. Then, you determine the areas in which you must absolutely, positively be excellent in order to perform at your very best in those key areas. Another way of defining your key result areas is by asking, what are the specific results for which I am the most highly paid and rewarded? Of all the things that I do, which are the things that I do that are the most important to the organization? Why exactly am I on the payroll? By determining and defining your key result areas by asking these questions, and then by organizing them in order of priority from the most important to the least, you now have a track to run on in your career. Your job now is to discipline yourself to become very, very good at doing the one or two things for which you are judged and evaluated the most highly by others. All of your success in your career will come from excellent performance in the key result areas that are most important to your boss and to your company at the time. All of your problems in your career will come from inadequate performance in one or more of these areas. Here's an exercise for you. Write down everything that you feel that you've been hired to accomplish. Take this list to your boss and ask your boss to organize the list by priority. Have your boss tell you what he or she considers to be the most important thing that you have been hired to do. What is the second most important, the third most important, and so on. From that moment onward, use this list as your operating plan with your boss. Continually update it in discussion with your boss. Be sure that every minute of every day you are working on what your boss and your company considers to be the most valuable contribution you can make to the organization. And then commit yourself to doing it very, very well and getting better and better. The law of incremental improvement is a key factor in the luck of all successful people. It says that you get better little by little and bit by bit. It says that all excellence and mastery in any field is a long, laborious process of tiny, incremental advances, each one of which may be imperceptible, but in accumulation they add up to mastery of your field. When I was growing up, I had very low self-esteem and tremendous feelings of inferiority. It never even occurred to me that I could be good at anything. When I saw other people who were at the top of their fields, I admired and respected them and simultaneously felt diminished and inferior. I felt that they were somehow of a higher order of being than I was. I concluded that somehow they'd been blessed with intelligence and skills and abilities that I was lacking. I sold myself short and I settled for mediocre performance for many years. But then I had a revelation. It occurred to me that every single person has the ability to be excellent at something, and that excellence was a journey, not a destination. One did not jump from mediocrity to excellence overnight. It was a long, slow process that anyone could embark upon and eventually reach the goal. And here's the key point. Everyone who is at the top in your field was once at the bottom. Everybody who is at the front of the line today was once at the back of the line. Everyone who is at the top of the ladder of success was once at the bottom of the ladder and climbed up one rung at a time. Remember, it doesn't matter where you're coming from. All that matters is where you're going. And you can learn anything you need to learn to achieve any goal you can set for yourself. The Japanese revolutionized their war-torn economy in the 50s and 60s with what they called the Kaizen principle. The word Kaizen in Japanese means continuous betterment. Just as Emile Coué, the Swiss doctor, achieved remarkable cures by teaching people to say, "Every day in every way, I am getting better and better," the Japanese applied the same idea to their industrial enterprises. Every single person in every Japanese company is encouraged to continually look for ideas in what is called their line of sight that can improve the process in some way. In your line of sight, right where you are, you can probably see all kinds of ways to do the job faster and more efficiently. And since it's easier to get forgiveness than permission, your job must be to continually look for and implement new ideas that improve the way things are being done, especially ways that improve the way customers are being served. Today, there's a lot of talk about the rich. However, this is the wrong word. Instead of the word rich, you should use the word productive. People are not paid high salaries because they are rich. They are paid high salaries because they are highly productive. You could even use words like efficient, effective, excellent, or extremely valuable. You attract rewards and riches by being the kind of person who deserves rewards and riches. And if you are eventually paid a lot of money for what you do, it will be directly as the result of design, not chance. Luck will have nothing to do with it. Do you want a salary increase? It's easy to get one. Just become very good at what you do. The better you get at your job, the more likely it is that they will pay you more to stay with your organization. And if your current company won't pay you more, some other company will come along and offer you more. One of the best ways for you to get a salary increase is for you to be hired away by another company because of your reputation for doing such an outstanding job. And believe me, everyone knows who the top performers are in every company. I've worked over the years with executive recruiters and personnel consultants. They are continually called upon by companies to find good people for them. They keep files on the best people in various companies and various industries, and they continually upgrade their files. When someone asks them for a top manager, a top executive, or a top salesperson, they check their files and they ask their contacts who the top people are in the current marketplace. Then they go after those people and try to hire them away for their clients by offering them more money. Sometimes I ask my audiences a very painful question. I ask them how many of them have been offered a job in the last 30 days. Perhaps 10% or 15% of the people in the audience will raise their hands. I then point out that the top people in every field are continually receiving job offers. It's as though they have set up a force field of magnetism that attracts new and better job opportunities into their lives. Executive recruiters, personnel consultants, and even employers phone them at work and phone them at home in the evenings and on the weekends. They're constantly being approached by people who are trying to hire them away by paying them more money and giving them more opportunities. And this is the track that you must be on if you're going to realize your full potential in our competitive economy. The difference between the person who earns $25,000 per year and the person who earns $250,000 per year is not 10 times the skill, ability, intelligence, or hours of work. It is often a very marginal difference in performance in the critical success factor areas that equates to enormous differences in income and rewards. Here's a question for you. Which one would you like to be? The top performer with the high salary or the low performer with the low salary? This seems to be an obvious question, but it's not as obvious as you think. Often when I ask this question, there are looks of confusion on the faces of the people in the audience. They're not sure how to answer. When I ask the question again, this time much louder, suddenly everyone wakes up and says that they would prefer to be the highest paid person rather than the lowest paid person. One of the great luck factors is contained in the power of decision. People are successful because they have made a clear, unequivocal do-or-die decision to be successful. People are unsuccessful because they have never made that decision. For you to achieve greatly in your chosen field, you must get serious about yourself and your future. The great majority of people are strolling through life. They want things to get better, and they hope that things will get better, but they have never made a clear, definite decision to make things better by getting better. I've spoken to thousands of successful people over the years, and the turning point for every one of them came when they made a clear, written decision to be the best in their particular field. And as soon as you make that decision for yourself, all of the various mental laws kick in and begin to work on your behalf. You begin to attract ideas and opportunities for personal and professional improvement. You attract people into your life who can help you with advice and introductions. Books, tapes, and articles land on your desk or in your mailbox that help you to become better. You receive seminar and course brochures in the mail. And the better you get, the more opportunities you get at the same time to use your new developing skills and abilities. One of the great success factors is the power of love. This power, which could even be called a law or principle, says that everything you do in life is either to get love or to compensate for the lack of love. A corollary to this law of love is that you will only be truly successful and happy when you commit yourself wholeheartedly to doing what you most love to do. It's very hard for you to develop the clarity to decide, the enthusiasm to begin, and the persistence to continue on the journey toward excellence unless you really love and enjoy your chosen field. Here's a question for you. If you won $1 million cash and you could do anything that you wanted to do as a job or occupation, what would it be? In other words, if you had all the time and money that you needed and you felt that you were free to choose any occupation, what would you most love to do? All the great successes in our competitive world today are men and women who throw their whole hearts into becoming excellent, doing something that they really care about, something that they feel really makes a difference in the world. You are engineered in a remarkable way. You will only be truly happy and successful when you feel that you're doing something that really benefits other people in some way. This external focus on making a difference in the lives and work of others is the common focus of all high-performing, highly paid, valuable people in our society. So, what kind of a difference do you want to make? Who do you want to benefit and enrich? And how do you want to do it? What sort of activities with others gives you your greatest feeling of self-esteem and personal pride? What accomplishments in your past have given you your greatest feeling of importance? What do you enjoy doing more than anything else? It's been said that life is the study of attention. Your life always tends to go in the direction of those things that attract your attention most readily. One of the ways that you can tell the right thing for you to do in the future is by looking at your past. What sort of skills or abilities have been most responsible for your successes in life to date? What have you always found it rather easy to do, but which often came hard to other people? What subjects in school most fascinated you? What activities did you most enjoy? If you look at your current work, what one part of your work do you get the greatest pleasure and satisfaction out of? What one activity in your work do you do the very best and make the very greatest contribution at? If you could only do one part of your work all day long from morning to night, what one part of your work would you select? With the way the world is changing rapidly today, you are probably going to have a series of jobs and careers over the course of your working lifetime. Every couple of years, you will change, either within your organization or from company to company or industry to industry. Your current knowledge and skills will become obsolete, and you'll have to develop new knowledge and new skills in order to remain current. In fact, a great question for you to ask is, what is my next job going to be? Then you can ask, what is my next career going to be? And the most important question of all is, what do I have to be absolutely excellent at doing in the future in order to enjoy a high and growing standard of living? People who do not plan for the future cannot have one. And the best way to predict your future is to create it for yourself. Since you're going to be changing jobs in the future anyway, you can start right now to define and describe your ideal job or position. You can think through and determine for yourself what you really love to do. you can then develop a plan to become really excellent at doing what you most enjoy so that you can be paid at the very highest levels of your profession. And remember, if you don't do this for yourself, no one else is ever going to do it for you. People sometimes think that it would take them so many months or years to achieve mastery in a critical success factor area that they lose heart and become discouraged before they even begin. But often, you can bring up your skill level in one weak area in a matter of weeks or even months. Forever afterwards, you will have that skill locked in at a higher level to use in combination with all your other skills. In time, you'll forget the extra effort and sacrifice that you invested to achieve that level of skill, but you will continue to enjoy the rewards and benefits of being one of the best in your field. The law of improvement is a key luck factor as well. It states that your life only gets better when you get better. This law is very simple. It says, in conjunction with the law of correspondence, that any part of your life can only improve when you improve. If you want your sales to get better, you must become a better salesperson. If you want your staff to become better, you must become a better manager. If you want your children to become better, you must become a better parent. You can improve any part of your outer world if you will take the responsibility for going to work to improve your level of skill, ability, or attitude in that area. Once you've identified the one or two critical skills that you need to develop, write them down as goals. Make a plan for their accomplishment. Set a timeline on them and start to work. Then, no matter how long it takes, just keep on keeping on. Be patient. Rome wasn't built in a day. Important skills take a long time to develop. But if you persevere step by step, brick by brick, you will eventually become one of the best people in your field. You will earn the rewards, the recognition, and the acclaim of all the people around you. People will tell you that you were lucky to choose that particular field or to commit yourself to excellence in that particular skill. But you will know that luck had nothing to do with it.